welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear true stories of inspiration and transformation and substance abuse and recovery. It's like a 12-step meeting on the air. So sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and listen in. Because if you've ever wondered what happens in those 12-step meetings, you're about to find out.
Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, where we feature true stories of people who have overcome addiction and are now on their way to recovery. Each week at this time, we do this show, and today we have a really I'm a huge fan of our next speaker and our next guest. His name is, for all of you who know him, and most of you do, he is the number one best-selling author of his last book called Too Fat to Fish, but now he's come out with a new book called Crash and Burn, and it's Artie Lang from the Howard Stern Show, and he now has his own radio show that he'll talk about. But the book Crash and Burn, which I suggest you pick it up, I couldn't put it down, picks up where Too Fat to Fish left off. Artie, you pulled back the curtain and you let us in, and boy, did you get a peek of really an unbelievable journey of what happened to him with his drug and alcohol addiction and what it's like now. So again, I almost feel like Bruce Springsteen's in the room because that's how big a fan I am, and I know Bruce Springsteen. But anyway, so without further ado, welcome Artie Lang to Steppin' Out Radio.
Good to be here. Good to be here.
And as we do every week, we begin at the beginning in your personal journey of how you started with drinking or smoking, right. Or how did it start for you?
Well, for me, it's a pretty typical, probably American story of how you start drinking. I started drinking in high school when I was about 16. Mm-hmm. You know, was when I really started drinking on a regular basis. I never liked the taste of beer. All my buddies love beer. I wanted to get right to the point. I wanted to get drunk, and beer took too much time. So I started drinking whiskey. I would drink Old Granddad and Jack Daniels and stuff like that, and smoke a little weed if somebody had it, and that usually was a good night. It became a problem, I'd say, after my father, who was a hero of mine, fell off a roof working. And became a quadriplegic.
It
was pretty devastating for us.
How old were you when that happened?
I was 18.
So that's
and,
young.
He became a quadriplegic, and he lasted 4.5 years before he died. In that time, he didn't have any of the proper insurance and all this stuff. And in that time, we had to go on welfare, and my mother had to take a bunch of different jobs. My sister moved out of the house to pursue college bartending, and I basically became a drunk and a gambler and a drug addict. Mm-hmm. I to escape from those problems.
Sure.
Instead of being strong like I should have been, I was just worth nothing because I just dove into the bottle and drugs and every self-destructive thing you could imagine. Mm-hmm. When he died, I was 22 years old, and almost on his deathbed, he said to me, take care of your mom. He said, try to do that, but he saw at that point just a kid who was going from job to job and a drunk. Mm-hmm. I wish there is an afterlife because he could see that maybe I got beyond that, but...
Mm-hmm. Maybe there is.
you never know. But anyway, I took taking care of my mom as meaning money, and I put that kind of pressure on myself, and I took a path career-wise that was the only way I thought I could make that kind of money because I didn't go to college. I barely got out of high school, and that was show business, comedian. I was always kind of the class clown. People thought I was funny. I was a big fan of comedy, and I said, let me try to do comedy. So I had nothing else to do with myself, so... I was working construction, and I went into New York City, which was 10 miles away from where I grew up. I grew up right outside of the city. Mm-hmm. And I started going to clubs at open mics doing stand-up. And I sucked in the beginning. I was terrible. Mm-hmm. But I had nothing else to do. So I just kept going back until eventually I got better. Mm-hmm. And I kept writing. And then I got good enough to get an agent after a couple of years. And... I started working at the port as a longshoreman through a friend, and I started working driving a cab, which were ways to make money while I was trying to make it. And then eventually I didn't need those jobs anymore. And at the age of 26, I stopped what I call real work, and started making a living in just show business, a comedy. And then shortly after that, I got on a television show, a network TV show, making 10 grand a week out in L.A., a show called Mad TV, and I had sort of made it. And since then, I've never needed another job. I've always made a living in show business, and a great living.
Yeah, that's a funny show.
And I was able to eventually buy my mom a house, take care of her financially. But the dark side of all of this, the entire time I was struggling as a comic and making it and then getting on television, my drug and alcohol problem just gradually got worse. When I started doing stand-up on a regular basis in the city, weed and booze turned into cocaine, a lot of cocaine. I had a bad coke problem. And I took that out to Los Angeles with the TV show. It got to the point where I tried to commit suicide because I ran out of coke one night. And I thought that was a low point. I went back to the TV show. I started doing great work because I was clean. Fell off the wagon. 3 weeks later, I ended up getting arrested for possession of coke. And I spent a week in L.A. County Jail. And stopped doing coke. I haven't done cocaine since June the 14th, 1997. For some reason, I got that out of my life. And it started a period in my life where I was drinking like a normal person. It wasn't a problem. It was a healthy time in my life. And I eventually started doing the road because my stand-up career got more successful. Helped a lot by being on the Howard Stern Show, which, you know, I went from playing clubs to theaters, you know. I left Mad TV, and I did a sitcom for a couple years, and I did a two-year run where I made movies, and I was living healthy. No drugs at all. Just social drinking here and there. I was actually living like a normal person. And the sitcom got canceled, and the movies had not really done that well, so I didn't have that there. But it's all about timing in life. Just as my sitcom got canceled, I heard that Jackie the Joke Man had left the Stern Show, and they were going to fill that chair. And I had been on the show four times with Norm Macdonald to promote movies and a TV show we did. So they knew me. So I was able to get a shot at sitting on in on the show, in the chair. I got into a rotation of about 10 guys who were all up for the job, real talented guys. And I got the gig, I think, mostly because I knew the show better than anybody. I was a bigger fan than anybody. Not that I was funnier or more talented, but I knew that show. And within 3 months of sitting in, I got the gig. And then it exploded. I went from being a sort of known working comedian, actor, to, you know, a celebrity, what I think is a full-blown celebrity. People know you when you see you down the street yelling your name. And the Stern Show was like a rock star experience. I went from playing clubs like the Funny Bone or the Punchline to Carnegie Hall, literally. That's the difference.
Yeah,
so, and big theaters for big money, 80 to 100 grand a week sometimes, and big money on top of that as a salary, and a movie that I co-wrote got made, where I starred in, and we got my first book deal that was number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. I was, you know, kicking ass, I mean, career-wise. But I overextended myself. And again, this is completely my fault. I got addicted to the money, and I made a schedule that nobody could do. I mean, literally, I would have weeks, as an example, where I'd work 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on the show, and Monday through Friday. Then on Friday, I'd leave the show at 10 a.m., go out to JFK Airport, fly to Phoenix, crash for a couple hours in a hotel, do two shows that night at a club. Get up Saturday, try to relax, do three shows that night, Saturday night, fly back Sunday, land, lose all that time going back to the East Coast, and then get up the next day at 4:30 in the morning and do a whole new week on the show. It was impossible. I'd go from nocturnal to having like a paper route. And I needed drugs to come up and go down. So I started taking painkillers to help me get on a plane, off a plane, get up.
You said you didn't like flying, right?
Well, I mean, I'm not scared of flying. It's not anxiety. It's just the tedium, the boredom.
When
you fly so much, you anticipate everything. And I am OCD that way. I get up and I anticipate everything I got to do. I got to go, oh, my God, I got to get there. I got to go through security. I got to take off my shoes. I got to hear that seatbelt speech. I got to do blah, blah, blah. So, you know, everything just ate at me, and that's how I was. I couldn't take one thing at a time. And the drugs just relaxed me. Everything was fine. But then I got addicted to painkillers, which are opiates, a form of heroin. And I got to the point where it became a better situation just to do heroin. Heroin was introduced to me somewhere in the summer of 2004 at a comedy club in a city that I don't mention. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but a guy who ran a comedy club said, you know, you should do heroin. It's better for your liver. That's what he said to me.
Instead of opiates.
Yeah, and that was actually the name of a chapter in Too Fat to Fish. So he got me a couple of bags of heroin. I went back to the hotel that night. I snorted them, and I hit the pillow, and the euphoria was insane. And I literally said out loud, I'm in trouble, because I know me. I was an addictive personality. And then I chased it for 5 years. For 5 years, I chased heroin. It became just getting it, trying to get the money to get it, not get arrested when I get it. I always wonder if I never took that line. I'd like to go back and find that guy and wrestle him to the ground just not to do that. How different stuff would have been, but that's what happened. And
do you think you would have continued, though, with the pills, and that would have been just as bad? And
Something was going to have to happen.
Yeah.
I was going to have to stop that or
but
go to the next level.
You know.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people do it because it's cheaper. With me, I thought it was healthier, which is the craziest logic ever.
Right. Well, someone told you, but
when you're an addict, you know, you think crazy. So my career, oddly enough, ironically enough, just got better. You know, the gigs got bigger. We moved to Sirius Satellite Radio, and the gigs got bigger, not smaller like I thought they'd get. The money was better. I got this book deal. And after the book deal, and it'll be a number one, I was all over the place on every talk show. And after the movie Beerly came out, that got me on Letterman, and I was a top guest on the talk shows, and it just blew up. I became a full-blown celebrity in my eyes, or as close as I've ever become to one. You know, to keep up with the schedule, and you know, I had this thing. I said, I'm going to make as much money as I can before I'm like 50, and then just retire with it all. And I bought my mom a house in this period. I bought her a car. I said, now I finally did what my father told me to do. But I was only taking care of her money wise when she'd rather me be healthy and live in a closet.
You know, she just said that.
She didn't know what to do.
Now, let me ask you something, because I think it's an interesting question. Were you ever insecure and you did the drugs for that, or was it really just to keep going from the nocturnal to...
No, I was never insecure about performing. I always liked performing.
So that's... Okay.
Matter of fact, I was never one of these guys who thought I needed it to perform. I thought I was better without it. It was just to keep going.
Okay.
It was to keep the lifestyle going.
Right.
And to keep getting on a plane and keep the schedule up. And then it became a nightmare. You know, I was trapped in this world that I couldn't get out of.
Did they know it on the Stern Show? Were they noticing it?
Well, obviously they knew there was problems, but they didn't know what to do. I put them in a terrible position because, you know, they didn't want to fire me because they thought that would really make me go off the edge. But they didn't know what to do. So they were just taking cues from me, and no one knew how bad it was. I kept it quiet.
And somehow you made it to work, pretty much.
It to work as much as I could, and when I didn't make it to work, it was even funnier. So it was like, I mean, again, the weird part is I kept getting rewarded with a bigger career. The gigs kept coming. The money got better, and
and your fame got bigger.
Yeah,
everybody loved Artie.
Yeah, well, and eventually. Like it is with heroin, you either die or you hit a bottom that's so bad that you hopefully live through it and get better. And for me, the bottom was January 2nd, 2010, when I hit the bottom.
And we're going to find out about that bottom, but obviously you didn't die, thank God.
Yeah, well, I had left the show to go to rehab, and I left rehab early, which was dumb, and I went on a binge. And on January 2nd, 2010... I ran out of heroin, I ran out of booze, and I decided pretty much I don't want to live life as a heroin addict anymore. It was just the worst. Big lie and just frustrating, and I was destroying myself and everyone around me, and I wanted to check out, as my old man used to say. And I grabbed a knife because I had nothing else, and I slipped my wrist, and that didn't work, and I stabbed myself in the stomach 9 times, thinking I'd bleed out or something, and my mother and a sister and a bunch of friends happened to come over that morning for an intervention that I knew nothing about. And thank God they did. They found me and took me to the hospital. I was in the hospital for 4 days. Thank God I was okay health-wise, just some scars, which I'm glad are there because they remind me about it. Mm. And I went to a couple of mental institutions. I stayed in bed for almost a year, depressed, trying to figure out how to get my life back together. Mm-hmm. But I finally got to a rehab through help of some friends in Florida, stayed for 3 months. That finally clicked in my head after being away from dope for so long that I could go back and live life. I knew I was still funny. I knew I could still work on my own. The Stern Show went away, but that was an amicable thing. They just thought it was the best for me, and I think they're right.
Yeah,
and I went away and came back better. And thank God my career and the fans did not abandon me. My agents, managers were there, and they said, people still want you back. And they were right. I had a whole new act, a whole new hour of stand-up that was based on my time going through this and rehab and recovery and everything. And I went back to doing stand-up. My first gig back, I sold like 6,000 tickets. And
wow.
Part of a show that sold 6,000 tickets, and I the fans loved it. It was really amazing and touching. And then I got a radio show, which has turned into my own show on DirecTV, a TV and radio show called The Artie Lang Show. It's in its third year now, and I'm about
to... And it's not in the morning, so
it's a nighttime thing, 10 to 1. My stand-up act I've been touring with for the last 2 years, and I'm about to tape a third special in the next couple months. Which will be cathartic, and the book deal was still there. I had a second book deal waiting there, and of course, this was, to me, a good thing to write about because it represents closure. So I wrote it, and I'm proud of it. I hope it'll help people stay off of the stuff. But, you know, every day is a big-time struggle. I'm not pompous enough to say I beat this. Sure, it's hard every day, and people are dumb. Even if they got 20 years straight, they're dumb to say they beat it.
Right.
It's stronger than you are, you know. So I keep that in my head, and that helps me stay all right.
You got some spirituality out of
it,
too,
right? Yeah, absolutely. I believe in a higher power more than I ever did. I don't know what's up there, but there's something. And my girlfriend of 4 years stayed with me the whole time. She's like an angel. And
there's a lot more of this in the book, so I suggest you get the book.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some unbelievable stories and how...
Bottom line is I'm engaged now to a wonderful person. I go to work every night on my own show. I got this book out, and I'm doing my stand-up. I'm working hard, and I'm back, and it's a miracle in a lot of ways, and hopefully it stays this way, but for now I have some contentment, and it feels good, so it can happen.
Do you mind us asking what you do to stay good?
I do whatever I can.
Do you go to meetings, or is it hard for you because you're famous?
I should go to meetings way more than I do. The famous thing means nothing. I should be more diligent with that. From time to time I try, but... a lot of times I white-knuckle it, which is wrong, but I try to stay around people who take care of me, that's all. And I try to keep busy with work. Structure's good for me. So
But not crazy busy like you did the last time.
I learn from my mistakes there with schedules. So, you know, I'm here, I'm kicking, we'll see what happens.
And now because we have a few more minutes. What would you say to somebody out there, young like you, struggling? What would you say to them if they're out there struggling? Because we are on the Armed Forces Radio, and you have tons of fans there, and there's young guys and girls, and they come home, and they're struggling, and you had a lot of pain with your dad.
Well, I think especially for the men, you know, it's okay to admit you're powerless over something. That's the first step, you know, with the AA thing. Is admitting that you can't control something and you're powerless over it. A lot of guys, even though they don't think they're that way, have that macho thing where they're like, I can beat this.
Right.
It's completely all right. Some of the strongest people ever have gotten taken out by this. To admit that, you know, look, I need help. I gotta have somebody's help. A lot of people want to do everything themselves.
Right.
And once you admit that and go, it'll get better. It'll get better. The biggest thing is saying, okay, you know, I admit I can't beat this.
Right, and I need help.
And that's the hardest part of it. The rest, it'll take time, mm-hmm. but the rest is easier than that. I
guarantee. And you got a sponsor too, which was helpful.
Yeah, right? That's a big part.
That's important. To get a sponsor. Yeah. Well, Artie, thank you so much. Everybody here is a big fan of yours, as everybody out there listening, I'm sure, is. I want to mention the book one last time. It's called Crash and Burn. And if you haven't read Artie's previous book to that, it's called Too Fat to Fish. Do you have a website, too, where people can see where you're going to be on the book tour?
Yeah, you can go to my Twitter, where everything happens, is at Artie Quitter. Okay. One word, ArtieQuitter.
There you
Artie
go.
Quitter, yeah.
That's perfect. So follow Artie. And if you want to sign up for our free newsletter, or if you want to hear more stories like Artie's, go to steppingoutradio.com.
That was Artie Lang. Artie, thank you again. What Artie shared with me, he just left, or I would have bought this up on the air, but what Artie shared with me was an amazing story about how when he was totally, totally down on his luck, he got a call from the one and only Bruce Springsteen. Artie had been to a concert in Paris and went backstage and met Bruce and his mom and his wife and her in-laws. And so he had had a connection with Bruce, and Bruce called him and said, when he heard Artie was in trouble, and had said to Artie, you know, hey, I hear you're in trouble, and if you want to talk, I'm here any day, just call me. And Artie was so blown away because that was his hero. And Bruce Springsteen, because he took the time to reach out to a friend, even though he didn't have any issues with addiction himself at all, he realized that a friend was in trouble. So that was just an interesting story that I wanted to share with you. So Bruce Springsteen, if you're listening, Artie thanks you, and the world thanks you, because that was such an unselfish thing to do. So you're listening to Stepping Out Radio, True Stories of Addiction and Recovery, sort of like a 12-step meeting on the air. And week after week, we bring you different stories from celebrities, from CEOs, to lawyers, to doctors, to housewives, to, oh gosh, police officers, firemen, even Indian chiefs. We've had everybody on this show that you can imagine, because addiction touches everyone's lives. But the good news is there's something that you can do about it, and that's what we do here every week on Stepping Out Radio.